Case number 15-1358 et al. Benjamin H. Realty Corp. Petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Horowitz for the petitioner, Mr. Cassilly for the respondent.
Good morning, and still morning. Yes, good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Stephen Horowitz. I represent Benjamin H. Realty, the appellant in this matter. This is a test of certification case surrounding the NLRB's decision that one employee in a who was the tie-breaking vote in a certification election was not a supervisor. We clearly maintain that he was. Why is it so important? Because in an NLRB setting, if there is a tie in the election, the election is lost by the union. Ties go to the employer. If the majority of the people vote for the employer, then there's no union. If the majority of the people vote for the union, there's a union. But here, there is a tie, and that goes to the employer. So this one vote is critical to this case. The issues before the court as I raised them was that the NLRB erroneously concluded that Perea was not, this contested voter's name was Perea, was not a supervisor, that the NLRB improperly denied our motion to reopen the record when the same individual, Perea, brought a lawsuit in the in the New Jersey Superior Court, where he alleged that on the date of the election he was a supervisor. And that the employer should not bear the burden of proof of proving supervisory status because of the fact that at the beginning of the hearing and during the course of the hearing, Perea admitted that he was a supervisor at least up through March of 2012. The election was in November of 2012.
It seems to me that the logic of Justice Scalia's Kentucky River decision is that it makes sense have the person who will benefit from the classification of a person as supervisor wants to show X to be a supervisor to have that burden because, as he says, it's easier to prove an employer's authority to exercise one of the 12 listed supervisory functions than to disprove an employee's authority to exercise any of these functions. So practicality favors placing the burden on the party asserting supervisory status. That seems very logical, and although the opinion says it refers to the NLRB's judgment here, it seems to also say it's a really sensible judgment.
Isn't it interesting that the triad of cases here that make up this supervisory issue, Kentucky River, Oakwood, Golden Crest, all of those cases revolve around nursing homes, hospitals, assisted living, etc. And there's a reason I raise this. There is a ratio of registered nurses to LPNs to CNAs in these facilities. And what happened in Kentucky River, what happened in Oakwood, what happened in Golden Crest, all those cases is that if employers exceeded the number of LPNs and CNAs, and they had to hire more RNs. And the RNs are traditionally the supervisors in those facilities. So what happens? The RNs, employees become disgruntled, they form a union, some of those RNs support the union, and the employer gets greedy and they start saying, you know what, all these RNs are supervisors. And in that situation, and why do they do that? Because they're trying to exclude those.
I take your point.
Yes.
That each of the cases.
But here's where this one is different.
Circumstances, which is an almost universal phenomenon. But Justice Scalia here in Kentucky River seems to have focused on a quite reasonable general proposition that would cut across all those particular circumstances. And serves the NLRB with apparent enthusiasm. For us to start ordering NLRB to retreat from that,
I'm not suggesting
on a sort of catch-as-catch-can basis.
And I don't disagree.
Extraordinary.
I don't disagree. What differs this case from those others is that at no point were those RNs asserted, or did those RNs who were contested in those elections, did they say, I was always a supervisor, and then it was taken away from me?
I understand. It's a different circumstance. You have an apparent, just an asserted shift of status. But, and I suppose a shift of status occurring one day before the vote might be so fishy, a claim of shift of status then might be so fishy as to undermine the burden allocation. But we have a confused record here, but I don't think it's quite that.
The answer to your question is that you've got such a short time frame and such a contested record here about whether he lost it or not, so fact specific that
that's what burdens are for.
I understand.
To resolve highly fact specific disputed questions.
Right. Listen, the truth of the matter is I don't want to get, and I respect your question, and I know it's raised as an issue here. That's my third issue. I'm putting the bulk of my argument into the fact. And listen, do I think it's unjust? Did I think that it was inappropriate, given this set of facts, that in a three-month period between May, when he was supposedly losing the supervisory status, to the end of August, when the petition was filed, and November, when the election was held, do I think it's really suspicious that it's happening in that short of a time frame? Sure. Is that the bulk of my argument? Absolutely not. I did it to preserve an argument, but that is certainly not the thrust of my argument here. The thrust of my argument is that the substantial evidence that was provided in this case, both in admissions by the other employees who supposedly supported this decision that he was no longer a supervisor, as well as the employer's witnesses, was that that the bulk of that evidence shows that this guy was clearly supervisor.
The advantage to your burden of proof argument is that it was at least a legal issue that we could look at de novo, whereas now you're putting your whole case on an argument about substantial evidence, and we rarely set aside NLRB decisions on that ground, particularly when it based on credibility determinations.
Well, I'm not contesting credibility.
Yeah.
I'm saying if you take, listen, the rarely applies to the credibility determinations. I have been practicing long enough to know that that is a loser argument. I do not attack credibility. Mm-hmm. I'm saying take everything that they say to be true, and in that situation, you still have substantial evidence that Perea was a supervisor at the time of this election. And there are seven facts here against everything that's in this record, but seven facts that stand out the most.
That could be true, and because of the peculiar nature of substantial evidence, there could also be substantial evidence in support of the board's decision.
Right.
No doubt. But that's a decision that you're ultimately making as to what I submit.
Think we are ultimately
that's not the issue.
Problem.
Right.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
It's not a decision we're ultimately making. It's a decision on which we owe great deference to the board.
I agree. But you still, the reason that there are three appendices that are about 2 or 3 inches thick each that was submitted on this case is that you still get to look at that evidence and you still get to see if that passes muster. That is still part of the job of this appellate court, and I'm not trying to minimize what you said, that it is a tough standard, but it still gets a fresh look here. Yes, you have to give deference, but if you look at it and you see that, hey, there's a lot of evidence here that shows that this individual was a supervisor, then you still get to apply your judgment your experience to the facts of this case.
Can I ask you a fact question in that regard, just to
yes.
make clear from the record? How long had he been a supervisor before
Since
Mr. Weiss came on board?
When these were buildings that were in existence before my client, that were operating before my client purchased them in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
He went from approximately four or six, of which Perea was a supervisor when he purchased it, up through 2011 when he had 13 buildings and Perea was still the supervisor.
So 2000 to 2012.
2012 he purchased three more, raising it to 16 buildings, and he was still the supervisor.
Okay.
So he was a supervisor throughout this whole time. I know I'm out of time
here. Why don't you just quickly finish up? Go
I'm going to raise those seven facts to you, and then I'm going to sit down and hopefully reserve some time.
Are you
going to
raise seven?
How about this? I'll raise.
You could finish up in 1 minute. Come on.
Okay.
Yeah. You're
Again,
over your time.
The substantial evidence here suggests that this individual worked as a supervisor. I want to just 1 second touch on the motion to reopen, because that is somewhat compelling as well. The standard with that is that the board certainly has discretion, but the evidence must change the result of the hearing. That's Manhattan Center Studios, an NLRB case. The evidence must change the result of the hearing. I don't see how a complaint filed in the Superior Court of New Jersey, where he claims that he was a supervisor at the time of the election, does not substantially change that. And there was a little bit of a...
Where does the complaint say that?
I'm sorry?
Where does the complaint say he was a supervisor at the time of the election?
It was on one of the first page. It said that he did not get demoted until January of 2013, if I'm not mistaken.
Went to the position of superintendent for three of the buildings. It doesn't say that he wasn't a superintendent for more buildings before that, and it doesn't say he was a supervisor before that.
If I'm not mistaken, it says he was demoted in January of 2013.
To superintendent for three buildings.
To superintendent, meaning that he was a supervisor prior to that time. Then you have a letter being submitted by his attorney in that Superior Court case saying, oh, my client is a poor historian, and maybe I misinterpreted him. And then after that...
Mr. Horowitz, you're out of time.
I'm out of time. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the board. I'll give you a minute on rebuttal. Okay? Yeah.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm David Casserly for the NLRB. This case is a fairly simple case about one employee's supervisory status, and the question is whether substantial evidence, as the court identified, supports the board's decision. And here, given the burden of proof, substantial evidence clearly supports the board's decision that the company did not prove that Mr. Perea was a supervisor as of the date of the election. What the company has to prove is three things for each supervisory element: the authority to wield that element with using independent judgment in the interest of the employer. Simply put, there's none of these that even really come close that they've presented evidence of. There's some small evidence that there was one employee's testimony that the board did credit that he gave routine kind of instructions, but there's no even evidence that these instructions didn't come directly from Mr. Weiss.
Can you clarify one thing for me? Just I want to make sure I'm understanding the state of board law correctly. In a situation mm-hmm. where you have, the issue really isn't supervisor or not writing on a clean slate, it's whether he continued as a supervisor after Mr. Weiss was hired. He was a supervisor for 12 years, and the question is whether he continued through that four-month period. And in looking at the hearing officer decision, which the board adopted, I'm assuming that the board doesn't say we ignore everything that happened for 12 years and we look with blinders at this four-month period and insist on indicia then, but that the nature of the analysis is more holistic. It doesn't exclude that, but the problem was here that there just seemed to be a rather dramatic change once Mr. Weiss was hired. Am I understanding it right that the board doesn't sort of close off everything that came before for 12 years when it analyzes the factors? It looks at the whole picture, but there was just a big change here.
Well, Your Honor, that was all admitted as evidence. Mm-hmm. So clearly the board could look at anything that was happening before 2012, and it did. But in terms of what carried weight with the board's decision, what carried weight was that he was not proven to have wielded any of these duties after May 2012.
Right. You had a sort of triggering event. You said the board could look at whatever it wants. I guess I'm trying to make clear that there's nothing in this decision that says the board doesn't have to, that it could really, when someone says, yeah, I was a supervisor for 12 years, but let's look at this four-month period before the election, and that's all we're going to look at. We're not going to analyze the evidence, looking at the whole history of supervisory status and whether it continued. I assume that's not the board's position.
I mean, the board's position here is the board did look at all that evidence and did find that there was a change. So if you're presenting a situation where there was literally no evidence either way, somebody had been a supervisor for 12 years and then there's no evidence introduced either way after a certain point, the board's not really deciding that case here. So I can't actually answer as far as what the board's position is other than to say that here, the board did evaluate evidence. It mentioned that he was a supervisor for 12 years. It did mention that he had, at some point, hiring authority. Although the board didn't specifically find that he wielded any other particular, it was stipulated that he was a supervisor, so the board didn't really need to get into, before that, which indicia of supervisory status he wielded. And moving on to, as you mentioned, the evidence of a change, there's ample evidence that there was a change here. First of all, Mr. Perea was specifically told by Mr. Weiss that Mr. Weiss would be in charge, that everything goes through Mr. Weiss. Two employees testified that their supervisor was Perea before this change happened. After that, they testified that everything went through Mr. Weiss. One employee who had initially gotten his raises by talking first to Mr. Perea when he got a raise after Mr. Weiss was hired went straight through Weiss. So
what about Judge Williams' reference, and that is what happens if the time frame is even shorter, if it were a month before the election, which is why I was asking sort of the bigger picture mm-hmm. question. And that's not so much a burden of proof one, it's just simply how holistic the analysis is. Because one can imagine concerns about sudden demotions right before an election.
Yes, Your Honor. So if the demotion were a month before the election, we'll mm-hmm. say that's right after the petition's filed, mm-hmm. that would certainly raise a lot of concerns under other areas of board law. That said, in terms of the law, the board's eligibility standard for this type of election is as of the date of the election, whether he is a supervisor or not. So if there is a demotion within a month, the employer would still need to prove that he was a supervisor after that month. What I understand your question getting at is, isn't that a little bit easier of a case for the employer to prove? And it seems so, but there's nothing in the board's decision to really, the board doesn't really discuss that here either way.
The point here is you had a big enough window of time to notice there should have been more evidence during 4 months if he was still a supervisor.
That's right, Your Honor, here. Or it's more than 4 months. It's from May at the very latest all the way through the election in November. So
didn't he go out on leave in September?
He did go out on leave
in
September.
So we don't really have, we're not going to have any evidence after September.
That's right. So 5 months here, at least, given that the evidence does show that his position was changing as soon as Weiss was hired. For instance, the last paychecks he signed for employees were in early April. So different parts of his authority were being diminished before that. Moving on to the evidence of non-supervisory status after that. Again, Mr. Cuevas's raise went through Mr. Weiss instead. And employees consistently testified that while before his demotion, Mr. Perea's demotion, they had gone to Mr. Perea when seeking leave and when seeking overtime. After Mr. Weiss was hired, they went to Mr. Weiss for those things, and they did not, Perea no longer had the authority to approve such things. And given that there's no strong evidence either way of hiring, given that nobody was hired, the employer has not carried the burden of showing that, Mr. Perea was still able to hire employees. And it makes sense that he was not able to, as the board found, as he was no longer able to pay employees or to recommend them for raises or approve their overtime. It was certainly reasonable, and substantial evidence supports the board's decision that he did not have the authority to hire either after that point.
With respect to the complaint, I know the board said it wouldn't have changed and everything, and I'm trying to do you read it as being necessarily inconsistent with the hearing test, the evidence before the board?
No, Your Honor, in that if he's demoted, there's nothing in the complaint that specifically says he was a statutory supervisor under Section 211 of the National Labor Relations Act and then was demoted, as opposed to him having been another position that he was demoted from.
I don't know enough about the real estate business, so maybe you'll both tell me this. Can you be a general property manager without being a supervisor? Because he does say I was that, and then I was demoted.
I don't think there's any evidence in the record as to the title of general property manager, Your Honor. But as a general matter, when it comes to supervisory status, and indeed this is mentioned in Kentucky River, there's a lot of employees who may be called supervisors. They may have different duties from other employees who aren't actually statutory supervisors. It could have been there was some evidence in the record that Mr. Perea purchased supplies when at Weiss's commands when other employees were not asked to do that. That has nothing to do with whether he's a supervisor under Section 211 of the Act, but he may have had a slightly different position. He certainly was paid more. So the complaint could have been referring to that demotion. But as you identified, that wasn't the grounds on which the board rejected it. The board rejected it on grounds that it would not have made a difference, given that what they were asking for was reopening the record, but this complaint wasn't signed by Mr. Perea. It was signed by his counsel, who then tried to retract it in a letter to the board. So it's unclear what they would even do if they reopened the record. Having the counsel testify would be not relevant information. He wasn't a witness who had any knowledge of the events, and Perea's testimony was already there in the record and credited by a hearing officer. Seeing as my time is up, if the court has no further questions, I request that you enforce the board's order in full.
Thank you. Mr. Horwitz, you are out of time, but you can have 1 minute.
Thank you. What
Judge Millett just raised is exactly what the board did in this case with regard to, are they looking at a four-month period? No, they're looking at a three-month period or less, because he was demoted sometime in May, supposedly, May to June to July, July to August, petitions filed in August. He goes out on disability a week after that. It was a four-month, and there is nothing in that decision to show that they looked at anything other than those 4 months. If anything, he abandoned his job responsibilities. Now, no one being hired is not the equivalent of losing your power to hire. Last thing I want to get into, Perea's testimony on appendix page 458, I ask you to relook at that. Here is how it goes when he got assigned these three other buildings. What were you told when everything changed? Well, that I was going to be the super, definitely, of three properties. And were you told that you were still the supervisor? At no time. Well, when you woke up this morning, were you told that you were still a judge? Of course not. Because even if you get assigned another building, it doesn't mean that you'll lose your supervisory status.
Sorry, when you're a super, is that a superintendent or a supervisor? How do we know he didn't mean he was the superintendent, which I think he was?
Were you told that you were still the supervisor at no time?
Right, but I was going to be the super, definitely, of Free Properties, so he was still going to be the superintendent.
Yes, but listen, this is a hearing where the word super was thrown around, and it was at times alluded to as superintendent and supervisor. If you read the line of questioning, it was superintendent here is what the intent was, although it wasn't clarified. But what is clarified is, and you were told that you were, and were you told you were still the supervisor? Answer, at no time. Why does an employer have to say to someone, I'm giving you two more buildings, oh, and by the way, you're still the supervisor?
Okay. Right.
It's implied here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Horowitz.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.